Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will continue with our series of year-ahead conversations as we will focus in specifically on Asian economies and markets. Joining me here today for the conversation, glad to welcome back Jing Chang Yu, Emerging Market Strategist Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jing Chang, thank you for dropping by for the conversation today. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Dan. Happy holidays.
Likewise, and as we're quickly approaching year-end, Jing Chen, can you provide our listeners, our clients, with a macro overview of Asian economies in 2025? What are your expectations?
Definitely happy to. So in 2025, we are looking at a scenario where Asian central banks are likely to keep cutting rates, with China continuing its policy easing. The speed of these rate cuts will differ across regions depending on local inflation, growth trends, and global issues like tariff shocks, tensions in the Middle East, and the Russia-Ukraine conflict. In some of the higher yielding economies, there is a small chance that central banks might hold back on rate cuts to keep their currencies stable. If we manage to avoid a universal tariff scenario, we expect regional growth to slow down by about 50 to 100 basis points. However, we think Asian economies are better equipped to handle tariffs this time around than they were during the 2018 to 2019 trade war. This is due to the ongoing global monetary easing and already quite stretched, right? U.S. dollar, which in our view is less likely to inch significantly higher from here, and a more robust global growth outlook. We also believe that China needs to ramp up its fiscal stimulus efforts. This should include measures like reducing property inventories, supporting social safety nets, ensuring liquidity for local governments and their financial affiliates, and recapitalizing the banks. Such actions would be beneficial for growth across Asia and could help mitigate a debt deflation slowdown in China, especially given the risk of higher tariffs. We might see new developments from the National People's Congress in March 2025, with China's deficit ratio possibly increasing to reach 4% in 2025 then.
Running a bit further, Jing Chen, with respect to potential trade policy with the incoming administration here in the U.S., can you elaborate further as to how new tariffs potentially could impact China specifically, as well as other Asian markets?
Sure. Yes, as we alluded before and discussed heavily in different publications, a key agenda item for a incoming new administration, the second Trump presidency, is increasing tariffs against the U.S. trading partners. This could mean the effective tariff rate on Chinese goods might rise to 30%, and there could be selective tariffs on other regions, including parts of Asia. For Asian markets, small open economies like South Korea, Taiwan, Malaysia, and Thailand, which have high exposure to both mainland China and the U.S., are particularly vulnerable to these heightened trade tensions. For mainland China, we expect policymakers to be ready to use stimulus measures to counteract the growth impact of potential tariff increases. However, if a proposed 60% tariff rate on China is fully enacted in a worst-case scenario, it could force a complete exit of exports to the U.S., potentially cutting Chinese economic growth by at least 2 percentage points. In contrast, those large and domestically-oriented economies like India, Indonesia, and the Philippines are more insulated due to their lower trade reliance, smaller U.S. trade positions, and greater flexibility to cut rates. U.S. security partners might also be in a better position to negotiate possibly by increasing their defense spending. Finally, markets like Taiwan have some protection due to their unique roles in the current AI wave. In the longer term, countries that can fill the gaps in the disrupted supply chain due to tariffs could also attract more foreign direct investment, with India and Indonesia, for instance, among the potential beneficiaries.
So, Jingchen, I'm curious, how would China and the rest of the region react to any renewed protectionist measures from the U.S.?
That's a good question. Let's start with China. So China, in my view, which, by the way, should already see these potential changes on U.S. trade policy coming, right? The main focus, however, is not on retaliating against the U.S., but on minimizing the growth shocks. While there might be some, you know, limited retaliation, like restricting exports of critical minerals or critical materials, I don't expect anything that is too dramatic or escalatory. Instead, China might allow for some renminbi depreciation to cushion the trade headwinds. But most importantly, they will likely focus heavily on using stimulus to boost domestic demand, as discussed just earlier. Looking at the longer term, China is likely to continue enhancing global and regional integration, aiming to become a leader in globalism. So this means continuing to invest in non-US regions, especially emerging markets. The best external defense, as we say, is to strengthen trade with other currencies, making those ex-US partners, including the US allies, right, even more dependent on China. So this is particularly relevant if the US targets countries with large trade surpluses with them. However, this strategy might raise still concerns, right, among those partners about, you know, the situation of over-reliance on China's supply. Ultimately, China needs to reduce its reliance on exports and focus more on domestic consumption. While this shift has been emphasized in a way it's already happening in various strategic ways, right? The timeline and success of this transition still remain quite uncertain. Just relying, you know, mostly on mass exports for growth is no longer sustainable. So addressing structural issues is quite crucial. Now, for Asia, the reaction, in my view, will depend on the nature of changes in U.S. trade policy. As discussed before, with global easing and the U.S. dollar already at high valuation, Asia should be better prepared than last time during first trade war. If the U.S. turns inward and sort of steps back from key global cooperation initiatives like energy transition, which is a priority for both developed and emerging world, I think potentially, you know, the cooperation between those countries and China could accelerate given China's cooperative stance and investment commitment.
Given what we know today, can you take a few moments as we close out to identify some key investment opportunities in the region that listeners, clients should be aware of?
Definitely. Let's maybe kick things off with equities. We find Asian equities attractive, right, in brief, thanks to the region's strong earnings growth for the most part. There are few markets in Asia that we are especially keen on. First off, we really like Taiwanese stocks. The integration of artificial intelligence components into products by leading semiconductor companies there is a big plus. This not only puts Taiwan at the cutting edge of technological innovation, but also boosts its global competitiveness. As AI becomes a bigger part of their revenue, these companies are also likely to gain pricing power, which could lead to positive surprises, right, in their gross margins as early as next year. That said, in the short term, the market might experience some volatility due to potential increases in U.S. export controls on chips and also other uncertainties if Trump decided to do so. These geopolitical factors could pose challenges for Taiwan's semiconductor heavy equity market. However, we believe investors will look past these hurdles and focus on the specific impact on companies. Two key points to consider. Number one, the rising capital expenditure from major hyperscalers on semiconductors is expected to continue. That would directly benefit Taiwan's semiconductor manufacturing industry, particularly the foundry industry. Second, there are no real substitutes for Taiwan's AI chip manufacturing capabilities, even with higher tariffs and stricter export controls, in my view. We've been also discussing India for quite some time, and especially focusing on its structural strength, like the demographic dividend and an attractive reform agenda. These factors, along with India's relatively domestic-oriented economy, mean it should be less affected by tariffs. Recently, Indian equities have corrected by a little close to 10% right, from their September peak. That, in our view, really makes the valuations a little bit more appealing than before from a tactical standpoint. So we view this recent sort of correction as an opportunity to build your positions, including your longer-term positions in the region. While earnings might still be a little bit subdued in the coming months, we expect growth to pick up around mid of 2025, with a re-acceleration expected as we move into the fiscal year of 2026. Investors might need to be patient over the next 2 to 3 quarters, but we believe they can position themselves for recovery. Now, switching gears to the other asset classes, starting with bonds, in our view, Asian investment-grade bonds tend to be more resilient than their global counterparts, in the sense that this is largely due to the fact that many issuers are either state-owned enterprises or have strong government ties. So this segment has already enjoyed favorable supply trends in recent years, and we expect the technicals to also remain favorable in 2025. The fundamentals of investment-grade bonds in the region are also quite solid, and China's recent stimulus measures are also helping to mitigate downside risks in the region. While the Asia IG spreads are historically tight, we find the absolute yields, which are in the low mid-single digits range, is quite appealing. This should continue to attract strong demand, especially from yield-focused investors. And we also anticipate further Fed cuts, right, and lower U.S. Treasury yields to support the Asia IG returns, which we estimate will be in the mid to high single digits range for 2025. And last but not least, on the currency front, we think currencies driven by domestic demand, like the Indian rupee or the Indonesian rupiah, and to a lesser extent, Philippine peso, are likely to be more resilient if trade tensions heat up then.
Well, Jingchen, very productive conversation. Thank you for outlining your expectations for the region in the year ahead, hitting on those positioning considerations, and look forward to continuing the conversation with you in the year ahead.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Again, today we have been joined by Jingchen Yu, Emerging Markets Strategist for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. I do encourage our listeners, our clients, to visit ubs.com/year ahead for all year ahead resources from the UBS Chief Investment Office. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.